This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 24th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, a look at why the two candidates for Illinois governor aren't debating this year. We'll also take a look at the forecast from AM 580 meteorologist Ed Kieser. First, a look at today's news. The Illinois Attorney General's rule that Governor Rob Blagojevich cannot sell the state's student loan portfolio to balance the budget and pay for more scholarships. Attorney General Lisa Madigan decreed that Blagojevich needs legislative approval to sell the entire Illinois Student Assistance Commission's portfolio, and she said money from any sale must go into other student loan accounts. State Representative Chapin Rose applauded Madigan's ruling. The Republican from Mahomet said he was worried when the Blagojevich administration proposed selling the student loan portfolio earlier this year and using two-thirds of the revenue to help balance the state budget. Rose said that would rob the student loan program of future revenue.
The scary thing about all of this is if you sell it for a one-time revenue source, that's gone. And if you don't have a long-term plan of how you're going to pay for it, you're opening a Pandora's box. It's really going to hurt students down the road.
Meanwhile, Illinois Student Assistance Commission Chairman Don McNeil says the Attorney General's decision validates their plans to sell or restructure parts of the portfolio to provide $100 million more in college scholarships to needy students. But it scraps the governor's original plan to use some proceeds to help balance the budget. It's not known why a 20-year-old University of Illinois student fell to his death from a tower next to Campbell Hall yesterday morning. But investigators say they're ready to rule out foul play in Christopher Fu's death. Fu's body was found shortly after midnight in a parking lot behind the WILL studios Monday. Assistant U of I Police Chief Jeff Christensen says they found a pair of glasses and a scarf on the radio and cell phone tower about 140 feet up. Christensen says a website linked Fu to a group of enthusiasts of a martial arts-like activity called parkour, which involves rapidly jumping over, around, or from obstacles.
It's difficult to explain, but it does involve jumping and stunts. But again, you know, we have to look at the whole thing just because he was a member of that group, and even if he did do that, that doesn't necessarily mean that that was his intent this morning.
Fu was a computer science major from Wilmette. Police say they're continuing to talk to those who knew Fu to piece together more about the incident. The Urbana City Council took the first step last night toward cutting its property tax rate to match Champaign's. AM 580's Jim Meadows has more.
Urbana Council members voted in committee to endorse a property tax levy that lowers the tax rate from $1.29.4 to $1.31.2, the same as Champaign City Council has done. The reduction is expected to leave Urbana with about $85,000 less to spend next year, but Mayor Laurel Pressing says she thinks the city can get by without cutting services.
Last year's books closed and we have a little bit more revenue, and then some of our pension costs will go up slightly less than we thought. So those two things combined equal approximately the $85,000. The estimate is that they'll balance out.
The lower property tax rate is meant to blunt the impact of rising property assessments so that the average tax bill for existing property owners in Urbana should go up an average of 3.3%, no more than the inflation rate. The Urbana City Council will take a final vote on the tax levy at their November 6th meeting. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
A Mississippi homeowner says Bloomington-based State Farm coerced him into signing a statement indicating he's satisfied with the handling of his claim after Hurricane Katrina. Thomas McIntosh of Biloxi says State Farm obtained the false statement in an attempt to quash media reports about the company's handling of hurricane claims. State Farm paid McIntosh and his wife more than $36,000 for their claim. The insurer cited an engineering report blaming Katrina's storm surge for most of the $1 million in damage to the home. McIntosh says State Farm never told him its engineers initially concluded that wind and not water was responsible for most of the storm damage. State Farm spokesman Phil Supple says McIntosh's allegations are contrary to the way the insurer does business. Illinois senators held a hearing over a statewide smoking ban Monday. The proposal would end smoking in restaurants, bars, and casinos. Chicago-area Democrat Ira Silverstein tussled with the Illinois Restaurant Association's Kenneth Sawyer.
There's no way of, you know, putting ventilation here where it's going to be smoke-free. Aren't you putting those people at risk?
Again, they can go somewhere else to eat. There are plenty of restaurants that have chosen to go non-smoking, and they can go to those restaurants. I just can't understand why people will not allow people to make their own choices.
Proponents of an Illinois smoking ban say waiters routinely inhale dangerous secondhand smoke. The Restaurant Association claims there are enough restaurants around for servers to choose whether to work in a smoke-free environment. For the latest newscast online, go to wyll.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. If things had gone differently, this week you would have seen the final television debate between Illinois' major party candidates for governor. But a couple of weeks ago, Governor Rod Blagojevich and Republican challenger Judy Bartapinka abandoned negotiations for debates. There was a brief flare of outrage in the media, but even that simmered down. Still, there are questions. Why did this happen, and who should voters blame? Illinois Public Radio's Ben Calhoun reports.
Maybe it's best to rewind, because when it comes to the Blagojevich campaign, this isn't the first time debates have died on the vine. It isn't even the first time this year. In the primary, Blagojevich had a Democratic challenger, former Chicago Alderman Edwin Eisendrath. In February, a month before the primary election, campaign spokesman Doug Schofield unveiled Blagojevich's first TV commercials. Reporters asked about debates. Again and again, Schofield went around the topic, acting like Eisendrath didn't exist and talking about the general election 9 months down the road.
You know, the governor's eager for the real debate in this campaign to begin. And what we would say today is we would issue a challenge today to the Republicans.
The political rule of thumb is pretty straightforward. You're an incumbent, you have a lead, then you avoid situations where something unpredictable could happen. And that includes debate. The trick is not to be too blatant about it.
When I was in the governor's race, I accepted the usual debates.
Edwin Eisendrath says when he was requesting primary debates, he proposed a pretty basic list.
I didn't go out and wave a flag and say, let's do Lincoln Douglas, let's debate every week. Just a handful of big, respected public debates that every election candidates who are serious have.
Eisendrath says he might have made a bigger stink, but while the Blagojevich staff publicly deflected questions about debates, they were privately telling him something completely different.
We were told he might be coming, we're working on his schedule, right up to the deadline. And the governor's campaign would say, we'll say yes at the last minute, you know, we'll let you know, and then the deadline would pass.
The Blagojevich campaign says those conversations never took place. But Eisendrath insists it was a textbook example of avoiding debate and riding out a lead through an election. He says that was a problem for him, but in the bigger picture, limiting debates is really a problem for voters because it forces them to make decisions based
only on partisan labels and only on you know, the attack ads that we see all the time.
Back to the present, Blagojevich and Republican challenger Judy Bartapinka have no televised debates on the calendar, and voters are being showered with attack ads.
Rod Blagojevich had enough.
Hold it. Topinka's taken 600,000.
Newspapers call it outrageous, a disturbing pattern.
Come on, let's get real.
After the primary, Blagojevich and Topinka said they wanted debates. They made big public statements, challenging each other to as many as a dozen. So far this fall, there's been a radio debate, but they haven't done a single one on TV. If you ask both campaigns, they blame each other. They say it's because of disagreements over format, over note cards, venues, over whether Green Party candidate Rich Whitney should get to participate.
It is a trick that campaign professionals and candidates have used for time immemorial.
Kitty Kurtz, a political consultant who's worked on campaigns for decades. She hasn't been in on debate negotiations for this year's governor's race, but she says voters should have no doubts. Limiting debates is a deliberate, road-tested, intentional strategy. And Kurtz says talk about things like schedules and format.
All of that is smoke and mirrors for the incumbent saying, we don't want a debate. They don't want a debate, and anything else they say about working out dates or times or logistics is all a bunch of bull.
Why do you think it is that people know they can get away with limiting debate?
Tradition. because they have been able to. You know, because for the last 20 years, 30 years, probably 40 years, they've been able to. So they think they'll be able to get away with it in this election cycle as well. And if the media lets them, and the civil society groups let them, then they're right.
Both major party campaigns say they propose several reasonable debate schedules. To this day, they insist talks broke down because the other side wouldn't play ball. Despite public and email confirmation, the Blagojevich campaign says it never officially committed to this week's would-be TV debate that would have aired on public television this Thursday night. I'm Ben Calhoun.
Temperatures are still rather chilly across the two states. Today in Illinois, it'll be mostly sunny. Clouds in northern Indiana today with scattered flurries in the morning, then becoming partly sunny during the afternoon. And elsewhere across Indiana, cloudy to partly sunny in the morning, then mostly sunny in the afternoon. The highs ranging from 44 in northeast Indiana to 54 in far southern Illinois. Meteorologist Ed Kieser says tonight it will be mostly clear and cold, with lows ranging from 26 in portions of central and southern Indiana to 34 in far southwest Illinois and near Lake Michigan. Tomorrow in west central and southern Illinois, it'll become cloudy with rain arriving in the afternoon. Elsewhere, still mostly sunny in the morning, but increasing clouds in the afternoon, and highs Wednesday ranging from around 50 in the north to 56 in the far south. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Tuesday, October 24th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.